is the sound of the garage, wide open in the sweltering summer. Guitars ranging from overheated amplifiers, the singer pulling sweat against the microphone, the bass and drums digging in deep, one passionate thud at a time. This is it, the returning sound of Plainfield, New Jersey's favorite sons, the Doughboys, ripping at their axes and skins for a whole new generation of beat fanatics. And a welcome return it is. What a fantastic review of a CD that came out recently called Is It Now? Well, it is now, ladies and gentlemen. The Doughboys are in the studio with me. At least two of the four Doughboys are here. And we have one on the phone. And I am going to first introduce, that's my best fanfare that I could do. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mr. Mike Caruso.
Hey, thank you so much.
And another one of the original Doughboys, and his name is Mike with a Y, Scavone. And you deserve a fanfare too. Mike Scavone, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, thank you, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, thank you very much. Mike has left the building. No, he has not.
Come back, Mike.
And on the phone, ladies and gentlemen, we have a gentleman who happens to be the drummer supreme, not the drummer that's doing this, that's me, the real drummer of the Doughboys, and his name is Richard X. Heyman. Richard, are you?
Go get him, baby. Hey.
Richie, are you on the phone?
I am here. If nominated, I will not run.
Okay. So we have three of the four Doughboys here, and I am doing this interview exclusively for a gentleman who is a friend of mine. He is a television and motion picture legend from the 60s, a gentleman by the name of Clay Cole, and we have a round of applause for Clay Cole. We are doing
my
this.
Man.
Where are you, Clay? Come on, we haven't seen you in so long.
We are doing this exclusively for Clay Cole's website. And I have some notes here, some very copious ones. The problem is, since your names are Mike, M-I-K-E, and Mike, M-Y-K-E, if I address you as Mike, that ain't going to work. The two of you are going to start talking at the same time.
That's right. Just start pointing.
So I will point, even though it's impolite. My radio listeners don't know that I'm being impolite.
They won't see any of it.
That's right.
I will point to one of you, and I'm going to ask the first question. I spent hours coming up with this question. How did the Doughboys start?
Well, Richard and I, we went to Hubbard Junior High, and we were in the school band. I played the trombone, and Richard was a great drummer. I loved the way he played. Turns out he had a drum set at home. I was getting into guitar, and we talked about getting a band together. And we went back to his house, got a couple other musicians, Mike McGarry, Bill Hanley, and Mike basically just had a mic. I don't even think he had a PA system. Bill Hanley had a guitar with a tape recorder, and the speaker, I think it was a 6-inch speaker, that was his amplifier.
Right.
And I had a silver tone guitar with a case amp, bought it from Sears,
right.
Three easy payments of $29 a month. Rich and I, we got together, and that was our first little, we used to do like songs from the Ventures, we do a little Wipeout, basically instrumentals, and going nowhere fast. until we discovered Willie Kirchhoffer at a talent show. We got Willie in the band.
So at that point, the band was how many people now?
Well, we had four, and then we got rid of Mike McGarry and Bill Hanley.
Now, what was the band called at that time?
The Triumphs. Right, Rich? We had our own little cards.
Rich, you want to chime in?
Well, like Mike said, we were just kind of doing a lot of instrumentals at the time, and it's just sort of like when the British invasion was just started. So we were coinciding with that. Talking 64, there was this kind of crossover period where people were doing kind of like these surf instrumentals, and then the Beatles hit and the Stones hit, and so everybody's kind of regrouping, trying to, no pun intended, but trying to figure out what to do next. And so we kind of made a combination of Venture-type instrumentals with the British invasion stuff, and Willie, our guitar player, began singing some of these songs, so we kind of turned into a vocal band at that point.
You were still the Triumphs at that point.
Well, then we, around that point when we got Willie, we turned into the Ascots.
Okay. Now, Mike Scavone is still...
Mike is with a group called the Apollo.
Okay, we're going to get to that story in just a moment.
But I'd like to make one disclaimer.
One disclaimer, ladies and gentlemen, a disclaimer from...
I don't think we ever rehearsed in a garage.
No, we never did.
Where did you rehearse?
We rehearsed in living rooms and basements.
Exactly.
All right, I'm going to redo the introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a living room act.
And Rich, didn't we rehearse in your attic also?
Yeah, in an attic. Everywhere but the garage.
Yeah, never for us, but I think the Apollos played
the
garage.
We used to rehearse in Mike Farina's garage on 7th Street, actually.
Okay. You changed your name at what point to the Ascots and why? I'll ask this to Mr. Caruso here.
Well, Richard's dad was in the garment district, and he came up with the Ascots. We loved it. And we actually had our Ascots pretty sharp with the iridescent jackets, the nice blue ones. We went to Newark to pick them up.
When you were emulating the British Invasion sound, were you also trying to establish your own unique sound while you were doing that, or did that come later?
Yeah, we were trying to do our own style. We'd listen to the records very carefully. Usually Willie would bring some great new records. He'd bring a lot of records from Chess. We'd be doing Albert King, B.B. King back in the days. We'd do what are some of the other ones? Some early Stones,
right.
Yardbirds, Animals.
Mike Scavone is still here, but he's not a part of this yet. But we're going to get there very soon.
That's right. He was over here. That's right.
Are you enjoying this, Mike?
I'm having a great time.
Okay. So far, you're a spectator. We're doing it in kind of chronological order. You have a group now. The group is now called the Ascots. And where are you performing at this point?
We're playing high school dances, Scotch Plains. I think we were playing like Shaka Max and Country Club. I'm not sure, Rich, was that still the Ascots or was that with the Doughboys?
No, we did a bunch of those. We played all over New Jersey practice.
Yeah, we were all over.
Playing over every weekend, different dances, junior highs, high schools.
Hullabaloo clubs.
Yeah, they came a little later, but...
At that time, did you try to get a record deal?
No, we were just like having fun playing together and learning new songs. And
we were kids.
Yeah.
Mike, I'm going to ask you a question now because everybody is at the edge of their seats wondering at what point the Ascots became the Doughboys and at what point this other guy who's been sitting here wondering when I'm going to involve him in the interview is going to do it. And I'm talking about Mike Scavone. And it happened, Mike Caruso, as a result of a competition in which you wanted to prove that your band was better than his band.
The Apollos, right?
Your band was the Ascots. And his band,
he was in the Apollos.
Where did this competition take place?
This was in Plainfield, New Jersey, at the YMCA. And we listened to the Apollos. I thought they were great. Rich, we were both in awe. You know, Mike Scavone, the lead singer, he had a mic around his neck. I couldn't believe it. I never saw anything like it. And they had Gordon Stumpo playing harmonica. Actually, Mike Farina was in the band, too. He was part of the package deal, Mike Scavone, Mike Farina, to come to the Ascots. So basically, we saw him. We won the contest. I guess we were in awe. We couldn't believe we won.
How many bands were in the contest?
I don't remember. It was a few. Then after that, Richie and Willie went out to see the Apollos play, and Richie could take it from there.
Well, the thing with Mike Scavone and the Apollos was Mike was a fantastic drummer, but every now and then he would come out front, be the lead singer, and the lead singer would go back and play drums. Mike came out and just blew us away, and we were just kind of daydreaming, like, boy, if we could ever get him in our band. And then a few months later, we start to get word that they were going to start to split up, I think. Somebody was going off to college or something. I can't remember the reason, but they were going to split up. And we kind of made our move and offered this deal. If we could get Mike Farina, their guitar player, and Mike Scavone to join our band, we'd have like this
super band.
Super band of Plainfield. That's what happened.
Oh, let me ask, up to this point, who was doing the lead singing when you performed? Was there one lead singer, Mike?
Well, Willie would sing, and then Richie would sing songs.
Mainly Willie.
Yeah, it was mainly Willie.
Mainly Willie. Okay. So now, at this point in time, when you had the competition, there were four of you? Or I'm trying to remember how many people there were.
Yeah, there were four.
Okay.
We had a second guitar player, Walt.
Walt was the second guitar player?
Right.
Okay, so there were four of you. It was you, Mike Caruso, and it was Richard X. Heyman, and it was the second guitar player, whose name was?
Walter,
and it was Willie. And what was Willie's?
Willie Kirchhoff.
Willie Kirchhoff. Okay. So now, what happened? I think, Mike, get ready because we're just about to bring you in.
Almost.
Did these guys come after? Did they call you on the phone or did they knock on your door?
Well, it was really neither. What happened was Richie and I don't know how this actually happened, but one day we were sitting in the backyard of the Apollos bass player, John Kozakowski. We were in his backyard sitting on the swings, and this was after Richie and Willie had come to the Apollos' last gig in Dunellen, where they saw me singing. The band was already pretty much broken up at that point. I think we had maybe one or two more gigs ahead of us. And Richie asked me what I was going to do now that the band was breaking up. And I said, well, I was really thinking about singing because, you know, that's really was on my mind at that point that that's what I wanted to do. And he said, well, you know, we've been thinking about getting a singer. You know, let me talk to the other guys. And they asked me to come down and try out. And I tried out, and next thing I knew, I was in the Ascots.
They were an offer you couldn't refuse.
Okay, so now what about, you were also trying to get Mike Farina. Was Mike Farina available?
Oh, yeah.
He was in first.
Yeah, Mike Farina joined a little bit before Mike Scavone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he came in first.
Okay. Mike was holding out for a bigger contract.
Yeah, I got twice as much as Farina.
You officially became a member of the band, and what year are we talking about?
I believe it was 1965.
Did Mike take on the lead singing of songs that you previously had been lead
singing? If it was a Stone song, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, because Willie did some Stone songs in the band, and Mike did all the lead singing on anything but Stone, The Animals.
Yeah, that Yardbirds, Kinks.
We have to point out that Mike Scavone is one of the biggest Rolling Stones fans in the world.
That is true.
We had one crazy encounter. We were practicing in New York City. I think we were playing the Trudy Heller show, and we were in the studio, right in the Ed Sullivan studio, and I hear the Stones in the background the last time. Turns out I'm opening out doors because I'm always so curious, always looking around. Open the door. It's the Ed Sullivan show. Take 13, Keith. Come on, get it together. It was the Stones right in front of us. We couldn't believe it, right, Rich?
Yeah.
So we were up in the balcony until someone, get those guys out of here. But it was like such a thrill. And, you know, to see the Stones, my God, our idols right there.
Did you know that Clay Cole was the first DJ in America to have them on American TV?
I saw those shows, I remember.
On his show, he was the DJ on TV.
I remember he had them on consecutively, too. They were on several times in a row.
Clay was the first to present them.
Wow.
I have a great memory of that show where the Stones were on, and Clay decided to have a screaming contest to see which girl screamed the best for the Stones. And he had one girl come up at a time and do the scream. And these girls, they were these real kind of hardened New York chicks. They just seemed totally oblivious, but it was very funny.
When you joined the group, Mike Farina was already in the group.
There was five of us.
Five of you. The five of you were, in no particular order, Mike Caruso, Mike Scavone, Willie Kirchhoffer, Mike Farina, and some guy named Richard X.
The guy hanging on the phone.
Heyman.
Yeah.
And you're the Ascots. Now we're going to get to something that changed your life. There was a competition. Was this on television involving Zachary, the cool ghoul?
That's right.
Was it Zachary, the guy that did A Dinner Was Served for Three at Dracula's House by the Sea? Dinner with Drac. Okay. The legendary Zachary. And he had this contest. I'll ask Mike Scavone, what can you tell us about this contest?
He had this show called Zachary's Disco Team, which was like a kind of a localized American Bandstand in a way. You know, he had people that came in during the week. All these kids from high school would come in and dance on the show. And they would have local bands every day, Monday through Friday. And what they did in this contest is whichever band they thought was best during that week would be the winner of that week. And that went on for about 40 weeks or so. And they had 40 semifinalists who then were in the semifinals. So that went on for another 5 weeks after that, and then it broke down to the finals. And so after a year, they came up with a winner out of those 200 or so bands.
And I wonder who that winner was. Was it the Ascots?
I think it was the Ascots.
Yes. How do you know that?
During the contest, how many songs could you do during the
contest?
There was one
song per week.
Yeah.
I remember the one that won it for us was Paint It Black.
Richard,
tell that story. Willie, I guess, picked up the song maybe 2 days before we went on the show. People thought it was our original song because no one even heard it.
And, it wasn't even on the radio yet.
Yeah.
Rich, do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Willie got the record right at the last minute. We learned it on the spot and took off and did the show, and the song was brand new. Nobody knew it, and that was a clincher, I think. That's how we won the show.
What did you win?
We won a record contract with Bell Records. Also, we were going to get to open up for the Beach Boys, Buckingham's at Symphony Hall in Newark, New Jersey.
Wow.
That was pretty exciting for little kids.
You win the contest, and you get a recording contract with Bell Records. And Mr. Scavone, what can you tell us about your first single on Bell Records, which was called Rhoda Mendelbaum?
Rhoda Mendelbaum was a song that was written by a guy named Tony Bruno. He was kind of a staff writer with a bunch of different publishing companies. Somebody gave us an acetate of the song. It was just him playing piano and singing the song. Had three verses, and we took it and we learned it, garaged it up as much as we could. And they brought us into the studio to record the thing. And we were kind of surprised when we actually heard the finished product because there were violins on it, which we had no idea was going to be there.
Harpsichord.
Harpsichord. Well, the harpsichord we knew because Willie played the harpsichord on
it. You mean these were overdubbed later on?
Yeah, our producers who were Billy and Stevie Jerome, the Jerome brothers they were known as, who also produced the Left Bank, had the hits with Walk Away Renee,
I think that
Little
was the
Ballerina.
Same harpsichord we
used. Yeah, Pretty Ballerina. Well, why don't we listen to a little bit of Rhoda Mendelbaum? This was written for a real person, by the way.
This Tony Bruno says that this was a girl that he actually went out with in high school and left him for some guy named Howie Kirschenbaum.
Oh, wow. You did not release this record as the Ascots. You released it as the Doughboys, so I have to ask you how that came about.
Well, the producer of this Zachary show, Barry Landers, said we had to have a gimmick or a little shtick. So he came up with the Doughboys. We bought the uniforms.
He also became our manager.
Yeah, he was our manager, too. That's basically how we got the Doughboys.
Just like that?
Because we would have never picked uniforms.
No, it wasn't our idea.
Well, we're going to listen to the very first single by the newly named Doughboys, and this is called Rhoda Mendelbaum. Mendelbaum, very interesting title for a first single by a very interesting group. Let me reintroduce myself. I am Ronnie Allen, and I am so pleased to be doing this interview exclusively for the Clay Cole website, which is, ladies and gentlemen, www.claycoleshow.com. That's C-L-A-Y-C-O-L-E-S-H-O-W.com. And I have with me two of the Doughboys in the studio, namely Mike Caruso and Mike Scavone. And on the phone I have Richard X. Heyman. And Mike Caruso, I'm going to ask you, the record came out, and what happened?
Well, we were waiting by the radio every day. Rich and I would be walking home from school. We'd have our little transistor radios. Nothing. Where's Rhoda Mendelbaum? Yeah. You know, we were told next week. You know, was that one the pick hit of the week or something? Or
what station? What station would have had
it?
Well,
we thought we were going to be on MCA, ABC. You know, we thought we were going to be on the Ed Sullivan Show. But
I thought Rhoda Mendelbaum actually did get played at some point
on
MCA.
Yeah, I think I heard her one night late at night from Buffalo.
Who told us that it got played on MCA?
I read that in one of the things here. So you waited by the radio and they probably played it when you weren't around the radio.
We went to the beach. We'd sit with our blanket at the beach. We'd have the girl. Hey, yeah.
Yeah, actually, you were quoted, Richard, in an interview with a lady named Beverly. Great interview, by the way. This is Beverly, a staff writer for some publication here, Beverly Patterson. And what you said was it was played on WMCA in New York City. We used to play these multi-gigs that were called WMCA Good Guy Shows. Richard.
It was sort of a little kind of deal with the devil, basically. It was like if we do these shows, they'll give us some airplay. This trade-off, and so we do shows every weekend with everybody and his brother who had a record out, and a lot of people that went on to be superstars, like Bill Diamond, and all the girl groups at the time, and a lot of kind of psychedelic-type groups. All these great records like The Music Explosion and Syndicate of Sound, and you name it, they were on these bills. So we would do these shows every weekend. A few people would mention, I heard Rhoda Mendelbaum on MCA, and I always missed it. I never thought of it.
Did you do any touring outside of the local area with that record?
Well, we didn't really tour so much as we just kind of went around, did these hullabaloo clubs that existed back then. And we'd go as far up as, like, up in the Northeast. How far up did we? Way up in New York State.
Massachusetts, yeah. Pennsylvania. I remember we went to Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you're having a lot of fun. At least you had a record out. You had bragging rights. You're on Bell Records.
Yeah, that was a big deal at the time.
Yeah. Yes.
To get it was because Bell Records was considered, a top label.
You had the first record out. It didn't set the world on fire. You did get some airplay. You were able to say in concert when you did it, this is our record, folks. Go to the record store and buy our record.
Sold well in Plainfield.
But it didn't exactly make you matinee idols immediately, so to speak. All right, we're going to get to a story now that is really interesting. I don't know if interesting is quite the word.
Scary.
Scary. You were doing a gig with the Buckinghams and the Beach Boys. Did you open the show with the Buckinghams next? Is that the way it was? And then the Beach Boys closed the show?
Yes. Right.
All right, so there's the three acts. Well, you were the Doughboys at that point.
Doughboys.
You had Rhoda Mendelbaum out. You were opening for those acts, and what happened, Richard?
Well, we used to close our show with the song Bo Diddley. And the way we did it, Mike would come out front with a floor tom. I would come out with a second floor tom, and we would hit these floor toms with a pair of maracas. And while we're hitting these drums, we're like dancing around and just getting really savage with the song. And we were about to go on, and we realized we forgot to bring the second floor tom. So we asked the Buckinghams, and they wouldn't let us use their drums.
The Buckinghams wouldn't let you use their drums?
That's right.
That's kind of a drag.
What a woody guy, isn't he?
Okay. So what happened then?
Who's your writer?
And we asked the Beach Boys if we could use their floor tom-tom, and they said, sure. And we were, like, shocked. We were like, oh, great. So we went on, we did our set, and we got ready to close the show with Bo Diddley. We have Dennis Wilson's floor tom-tom. I can still remember it. It was kind of this swirly, patterned finish on it. And I had my Gold Sparkle floor tom. We're doing the song, and we're getting really crazy. The legs to both floor toms are starting to loosen, and we're, like, sitting on top of the drums like they're, like, a pair of, like, Broncos, and we're, like, beating the hell out of these drums. Maracas are breaking. There's maraca dust all over the place. And we're just about hitting the last chord of the song when out from the side of the stage, Dennis Wilson from the Beach Boys just starts charging out full speed and jumps Mike Scavone right in front of the audience, leaps on top of him and just starts punching him in the head and wrestles him down to the ground and starts swearing like a drunken sailor. And I was just shocked more at his language than the fighting.
Mike, what do you recall of what he just described?
I mean, exactly what he's saying. The difference is, from my perspective, I had no idea what was going on. I'm standing there singing. We had prearranged that we would have the curtains begin to close slowly as we were ending on Bo Diddley. We wanted it to be kind of a fade out and just go behind a curtain. And as that curtain's coming together, all of a sudden, I feel somebody grab me from behind, lift me up, and throw me down. And at first, when I got grabbed from behind, I thought maybe it was some crazy girl that just ran in off the, you know, out of the audience. And then when I got lifted up and hit to the floor, I realized this is no girl, at least I hope not. And then when I heard the swearing and the punching followed, I was like, oh boy, this is something's going on here. I'm not sure what it is yet.
If this was a fairy tale story, we could say Dennis and you eventually became good friends, but that didn't happen, right?
Not at all.
Never.
Not at all. I never listened to another Beach Boy record.
All right, let's move on to a more pleasant thing, but that is an interesting story, and I thank the two of you for relating that. We're going to move on to your second record now, which is called Everybody Knows My Name. And this had a couple of very distinguished writers. And who are they, Mike?
Bob Crewe and Bob Gaudio. That was the one we really thought, when we saw Picket of the Week and Billboard, you know, we knew this was the one. We thought we're going all the way on this one.
Was the song written for you?
Actually, it was written already, and then it was given to us.
I believe it appeared on a Four Seasons album.
Yeah, it was
one of the Four Seasons.
Oh, the Seasons did the song.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
This is the second recording. This is on Bell Records. And these are the Doughboys with Everybody Knows My Name. Featuring the lead singing of Mike Scavone, Everybody Knows My Name. And I'm Ronnie Allen, and now we can bring in Clay Cole once again to the picture, because I believe that you performed that particular song not once, but twice on Clay's show, Mike? Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, I think the one time we were out with the Five Stair Steps, and then the second time it was 10-wheel drive, Genny Ravon. We met Clay. It was such a thrill, you know, after seeing him, you know, having the Stones on there, George Carlin, Richard Pryor, you know, all the greats. Clay's such a wonderful guy.
Were you guys nervous?
Yeah, somewhat, you know, because it was a big TV show.
Mr. Scavone is nodding his head. Yeah, we were a little bit nervous.
I was trying to fake it.
But actually, you were lip-syncing the record, so.
Yeah. It was easy when you're lip-syncing.
Yeah, true.
You don't have to worry about making mistakes.
What do you do if the record starts getting stuck?
I know.
Well.
It didn't happen. You appeared in your World War I uniforms?
Actually, I don't think so. Did we, Rich? Because I remember I borrowed your little seersucker coat. Yeah, I can't remember. I think we threw their uniforms away by then.
It's amazing that we remember any of this stuff.
Yeah,
it's
really
a blur.
Quite a few years.
Rich, you got all the pictures.
You got pictures, Rich?
Yeah, I got them.
Pull them out.
Everybody Knows My Name came out. You appeared twice on the Clay Cole Show. You did a lot more performances. Did it get more action than Rhoda Mendelbaum?
Somewhat. We had a little more action. We had a competing record with the Jerome Brothers put out by the Fifth Estate, Ding Dong, The Witch Is Dead.
The Witch. Yeah, I remember.
And I guess that skyrocketed because of the novelty.
So they worked on that one.
And then we're on the shelf. They said, well, you only have so much in advertising.
Doughboys were on the shelf.
The Fifth Estate.
Yeah. You got some action, but it didn't become like a national hit. How much longer after that did you stay together before you split?
Was that about a year, Rich?
Yeah, the Doughboys stayed together for a while. We changed personnel. We sort of dwindled down from a five-piece to a three-piece by the end of the decade.
Who left first?
First, Farina, and then Mike Scavone, and then we were just a three-piece with Willie, Mike Caruso, and myself. That was in 68. We were the house band at the Café Wa, Greenwich Village, for that summer.
Oh, you did that for the entire summer? How many nights a week did you do that?
It was like 5 nights a week or 6 weeks?
Yeah, I think it was just about every night.
Yeah. Wow.
And then I guess by the end of 68, into 69, we sort of dwindled away.
Any reason that you did it? Did you get tired? Do you remember Mike Caruso?
It was like a blur. I don't remember why.
I think, we were kind of following some of the trends that were coming in, and I write about this. I wrote a book about all these stories, and to my memory, we were really into The Who when they first hit, and we realized they only had one guitar player, so we decided we should only have one guitar player, so we got rid of Mike Farina. Jimi Hendrix Experience came out, and we were like, oh, that's just in Cream, and we said, oh, we should just be a trio so we can get into these long jams like they do. So, that was the end of Mike Scavone.
So good.
Figured we'll just be like a power trio.
So when we talk about the group breaking up, when was the end?
I believe that was 68, right, Rich?
Yeah, toward the end of 68.
So you had been together in one form or other for about 4 years. Then.
Right.
Right, okay. Now, in the interim period of time between the old Doughboys and the reemergence of the Doughboys, Mike Scavone was not twiddling his thumbs. Maybe Mike Caruso was, I don't know, but Mike Scavone was not.
Doing stuff.
Were you doing stuff too, Mike?
Yeah.
That was a little joke, Mike.
Nobody was twiddling their thumbs.
Nobody was twiddling their thumbs. Mike Scavone was briefly with a group called Ram Jam, who had a hit with a song called Black Betty. I'm going to play just a few seconds of that hit because, as Mike confided to me right before this interview, he had nothing to do with it. How'd you like it, folks? Was the record on the chart when you joined the group, or was it after the record was off the chart?
The single had just been released. There was no album yet. And I was asked to audition for the group because Bill Bartlett, who sang Black Betty, was a very good singer, was a pretty decent songwriter as well, great guitar player. He just felt that he couldn't carry it all. I think the record company, which was Epic, really wanted to have somebody out front. They were looking for a front man for the group. So I auditioned and I got...
They didn't really see him as a front man, or he just felt it?
No, I guess not.
I guess they're thinking in terms of entertainment, not just recording.
Right. The first album, he sang half the songs, I sang half the songs.
And the first album was called Ram Jam?
It was called Ram Jam.
And then the second album was called...
Second album was The Portrait of the Artist as a Young Ram, which actually got re-released in England in 2006.
Ram Jam was a brief part of your history. Mike Caruso, what were you doing during that period of time? Were you doing any gigging on your own? Were you going to school?
What I did right after the Doughboys, another band that was a house band, The Raves, I played with them. They had an album out. And through that, I got to do a lot of studio work, and I got to play with Kenny Laguna, Bo Gentry, Richard Gordell, and I did a lot of studio work, and we had this one record. He called us together. He says, look, this thing is number 77. What a bullet. I got to get a band together. But unfortunately, we're going to have to use Tony Orlando. And Tony was like about 8 years older than us.
And what was that record?
It was called Make Believe.
Make Believe. That was released by Tony, and the name of the group was Wind.
Wind, exactly. So we used Tony for a little while, then they finally said, we have to get someone younger. So I eventually got Mike. I got Richie on drums. We had an organ player who eventually quit, and we were going to play with The Illusion. In Pennsylvania, big outdoor concert. I called Rich up. I said, Rich, our keyboard guy, his parents won't let him leave town. So he says, well, I said, you play keyboards. He says, I never played a Hammond. So, we got, thousands of people in the audience. Rich is fooling around with the dials on the Hammond organ, right?
Yeah, here I am trying to sing like Tony Orlando.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Not easy to do.
No.
So Richie pulled it off, though. And Mike, great job. So so we played around, and we did that for a while.
But it wasn't the Doughboys.
Nah, it wasn't.
Not at all.
No. Did you ever give any thought at that time, maybe we should get back together?
Yeah, that was a dream I always had. I always thought we'd be together forever.
It didn't happen in the 20th century.
Right.
Well, no, that's an amazing thing. I never thought of
that. That's right.
Look at it that way. But it did happen.
The next century.
The next century, the 21st century, around the year, what would you say, about 2001?
Yes.
And how did it happen?
That was a big surprise party for Richard's, little Rich over there. Nancy had never heard the Doughboys and came up with a great idea. She was talking with Mike. Mike had seen Rich was advertising in the aquarium.
Yeah, that was, other than what we did with Wind and Cool Heat, which was another band that we did together following that, we kind of like lost contact. I hadn't seen Richie probably in a good 10 years, maybe even longer than that. And I had found out that he was doing a lot of stuff on his own and putting out these CDs. So I contacted him. I started seeing all the shows in New York and got to be friends with him and his wife. And Nancy asked me at one point, she wanted to have a surprise party for Richie, and she asked me if I could get together with Mike and Willie and possibly put something together. So what I did was we took about 10 of our songs that we could all actually remember from what we used to do back in the old days, and we rehearsed them with me on drums because I played
just
drums.
For this little party, not with any intention of getting the group back together.
Oh, no, it was just for the party.
They surprised you, Rich?
It was just like this great idea. My wife said, we're going to just go to this club to see some local band that we should check out. And I went, and Mike Caruso was there, Mike Scavone, and it's just amazing. We got up on stage, and we did a Route 66, like we used to start out with.
Did they say, come on up to the stage and join us? Is that what they did?
Yeah, basically. That's what it was, like. Mm-hmm. I just walked in the club.
Yeah, I remember, we walked in. We actually had an old poster from, 1965 on the front door. I think that's when Rich saw the Doughboys. It was good, right? And then, that's what happened. We went backstage and went on.
And Zachary was there.
Yep. Yeah,
Zachary. Oh, my gosh. This was really...
Zachary was there and he introduced us.
Yep.
Wow.
It was like magic.
Well, did he introduce you as the Doughboys?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
As if you were back together, but you really weren't back together.
Exactly.
No, it was just kind of like we were just... In
fluke.
1 second, we were back together. We started to play Route 66 and all these songs, and it just kind of fell right together like a time warp. It was just amazing.
You mentioned Route 66, and now it's a good time, before we actually officially let people know how the album came about, since you mentioned Route 66, why don't I play that track from the album, because it's one of the tracks that you recorded, and it's great. This is a song that came out, I guess, in the 40s, probably, initially. I'd heard that Bing Crosby did a version, and Nat King Cole did a version. Of course, some group from England did a version. Stolling Roans, I think it was.
We based our version loosely on.
Yes, and we're going to listen to it right now. These are the Doughboys doing Route 66.
Your kids. Oklahoma City looks out so pretty. Y'all to see Amarillo and Gallup, New Mexico. France of Arizona, don't forget Winona. Came in Boston, San Bernardino. Would you get hip to this kind of tip? And go take that California trip. I said, get your kids on Route 66. I said, get your kids on Route 66. Come on and get your kids.
Kind of a sneak preview of what we're going to be discussing for the remainder of the show from a CD called Is It Now? Route 66 is track 4 on the CD. I am Ronnie Allen talking with the Doughboys. On the phone we have Richard X. Heyman. The other two in the studio happen to be Mike Caruso, Mike with an I.
Standard.
And Mike a little bit different with a Y, Scavone.
Non-standard.
And the other member we're going to get on the phone, his name is Gar Francis. Just heard Route 66 by the Doughboys, the reformed Doughboys. Was it that evening of the surprise party that you decided, let's get back together for real?
Well, it wasn't even so much a decision. It just seemed like a natural progression. It was so much fun.
You mean it never officially happened?
Well, it just evolved. It just all of a sudden, next thing I knew, we were back together.
We're going to make it official right now during this interview exclusively for Clay Cole. We are going to now officially say, because it's never been official up to this point, despite the CD, the fact that they're doing gigs as the Doughboys, but they never officially decided to get back together until tonight. So there it is. Just for you, Clay, they got back together right here
in the
studio.
Clay.
Now, Gar has to agree with us, otherwise the whole thing's off. You started doing performances. When did the CD get recorded?
It just seemed like a natural thing to do. I mean, you know, we never got to do an album as the Doughboys, and here we were doing a lot of the same material, pretty much the same repertoire that we had back in the mid-60s. And we were just kind of starting to toy around with some original songs again. And just seemed like a natural thing to do. So we went in, we did some recording with Willie. And subsequent to that, tragedy struck and we lost Willie.
The thing was, what we did with Willie was we started doing all the cover songs that are on the CD. And there was a couple other cover songs that we had done. And we were doing them at that particular point, mainly because people were asking us for stuff. And also so we'd have something to show to club owners, this is what the band sounds like. And we were going to build on that from there. It's kind of nebulous how this thing actually happened, because somewhere between probably around 2004, I guess, is when we actually went into the studio, and then 2007 is when we finished it up. You know, so we were just playing around a little bit here, a little bit there.
So you actually started recording when Willie was still with the group.
Right.
Is Willie on some of these?
Yeah. All the cover songs.
All the cover songs. The cover songs specifically on Route 66, which we just heard, he's on that one.
Mm-hmm.
He would be on I'm Crying, The Animals.
Yes.
And he would be on Ain't Gonna Eat Out My Heart Anymore. That was a Young Rascal song.
Yes.
He was on those. He was on it when you started the CD, which is around 2004. Tell me about his passing, Mike.
It was so sad. It was like Mike was talking before. It was so sudden. My cousin Danny said, better go see Willie. And I was, what are you talking about? And he was telling me he's dying. And I went there the one time he regained consciousness and he, you know, looked over, hey, how you doing, Mike? I'll be right with you guys. And that was like the last I saw him. I went back, I guess a day or two later, the hospice room, and was there with his sister and his wife. And it was really very sad. She was, you know, telling him, Willie, we made it till death do us part. And I tell you, it really brought tears to my eye, you know, just to see him go like that. It was, you know, very sad.
He knew what you were working on, and he knew that he was a part of it.
Willie was like the heart and soul of the band. Just, you know, irreplaceable, really. Just had this intense charisma, for one thing. Everybody loved Willie when you met him. He just was the most likable person you ever want to meet. He was just a total original. He was regarded around, you know, the Central Jersey area as, you know, just the best guitar player around. And he was just kind of a legendary musician back in those days. And when we got back together, it was just, you know, such a thrill to be playing again. And he got sick. He was gone.
And nobody ever played guitar like Willie. He had the most unique, the cleanest style. It was just incredible.
Did you replace him with anybody else?
Yeah, Gar Francis, we got him right after that, and he worked out real good.
The CD is called Is It Now? And it features the contributions of Willie on it, as well as additional tracks that you did subsequent to his passing away. And there's a lot of original songs on here, including the first one, which is called Black Sheep, which is written by Gar Francis. We'll have him on the phone in just a moment. And somebody named Mike Scavone. This has gotten a lot of attention, this particular song.
Yeah, well, as far as that goes, that's a big surprise to every one of us. We were thinking Out of the Night was going to be the single off of this thing. The song really was something that Gar had written and had, I would say, 75-85% of it already done. He handed me the lyric sheet and said, look, I just have these places. I don't know what to do here. I don't know what to put in here. And I just basically finished the lyrics for him, mainly on the taglines in between the choruses and the verses and stuff. And we shared the rights on it, but it was predominantly our song.
From the new CD, Is It Now? By the Doughboys, this is Black Sheep.
Is It Now?
That was Black Sheep by the Doughboys. And Richie, do you have any last words before we release you from this interview?
I just had a lot of fun, and just an honor to be doing this, especially with the association with Clay Cole, the great rock and roll show of New York.
And Clay is alive, well, has the new website, www.claycoleshow.com, and we're doing this exclusively for that website. Richie, thank you so very much for joining us, and I hope I get a chance to see all of you guys in person in a performance. And, of course, I will stay in touch with you, Richie.
You're very welcome.
You take care, Richie.
All right.
Have a good night.
Give my best.
Good night, Rich. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's call Gar. What's Gar's number?
Yeah.
Okay.
908.
Oh. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. Well, hi,
Message. Press 1, or just wait for the tone.
I'm going to wait for the tone.
The numeric page.
Too lazy to press
1. Press 2 now. At the tone, please record your voice message.
Hi, is this the right number? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, this is Ronnie Allen. I'm a DJ, and I have two doughboys here in the studio with me, and I was hoping to reach Gar Francis. Gar, if you pick up this message, you can still call me. I have my cell phone on. Call me at 215. We're doing the latter part of our interview. If you call on time, we can bring you into the interview, and if not, they'll still say nice things about you, hopefully. Bye-bye. And that was a great track. That was Black Sheep and getting a lot of attention. It's making the Doughboys well-known once again. The amazing thing about this is I just have this sneaky suspicion that you're going to be bigger this time around than you were when you first started. Right. I mean, I have this really good feeling that it's going to happen. I
hope you're right.
I just feel it. Is there a website?
Yes, www.thedoughboysnj.com. That's our official website. And Doughboys is spelled Doughboys. Okay. And then we have a MySpace, which is also MySpace/thedoughboysnj.
Make sure you put the NJ.
You need the NJ. Do you get a bakery if you or something?
Well, oddly enough, there's about five other bands with the name the Doughboys, and they all stole it from us because we had it first.
Well, I've heard of the Light Crust Doughboys.
There is a Light Crust Doughboys.
Did they steal
there?
Did they steal it from you?
I don't know. Those guys are
those guys?
A bit older.
Oh, okay. What can you find out on the website? How you get the CD? And
you can find out how to purchase the CD. You'll get samples of the songs, find out where we're playing. Pretty much everything's up there. We have the Black Sheep video, which we just finished, also on the site.
We're going to play a track now, which is track 2 on the CD, and actually we're going to end up having played the first 4 tracks, because Route 66 was actually track 4, and we're going to go 1, 2, 3, and then play maybe 1 or 2 of the later tracks on the CD. Next one we're going to play is Out of the Night, and that was a song written by the gentleman who was just on the phone. Rich Heyman wrote this particular song. What can you tell us, Mike Caruso, about Out of the Night?
That was a great song.
Good thing you said that, because he's going to hear this.
I always loved the song. Great lyrics, really driving energy song. Sirius Satellite has really picked up on that, and it's getting played all over the world.
You're real serious about that.
Yeah, I'm real.
Okay.
Extremely.
Really real.
That song, actually, I had sung with Richie back in a band called Act Your Rage, which was in the early 70s. So he wrote that song quite a while ago, 71, I believe it was.
All right, let's listen to it right now. These are the Doughboys. Boys and Out of the Night.
We'll be right back.
That was Out of the Night by the Doughboys. My impression of this CD, listening to all the songs on this CD, you combine the best elements of some of the most popular groups of the 60s primarily. We're talking about it has kind of like a 60s sound, but yet it's also contemporary because you're adding your own unique feeling to it. You catch my drift. Did I read that exactly the way you wrote it, Mike? You see my point, though. You're trying to actually... Yeah. It has blues elements. It has garage rock elements. You're still a garage band. Would you still say you're a garage band?
Yeah, we're a garage R&B type of band.
Garage. Little Steven, what could you tell us about Little Steven? Before we do Hear Me Moan, what could you tell us about Little Steven?
Well, Little Steven's Bruce Springsteen's guitarist, and you've seen him in The Sopranos. And he's doing a tremendous job in the rock and roll world as far as getting schools, you know, promoting music back in the schools, because this is like something that's sad. The budgets are being cut in many schools, and he's going around, and he's really pushing, getting the instruments back in the kids' hands. And like he said, if it wasn't for music...
Where would you all be now? You're very close to Little Steven then.
Yeah, we haven't met him yet, but...
In terms of, you've talked to him on the phone?
No, we've talked to some of his people.
Okay, so you've talked to his people.
Yeah.
And but he might eventually have something really, you know, substantial to do with you.
Oh, yeah.
That's fantastic.
We had our people call his people.
Yeah, right.
Your people call his people. There's a word for it. It's called networking.
Networking.
That is the word. That is the difference between people never being heard of and people being heard of, I guess.
Right.
Okay, Little Steven. And we're going to get to a song right now called Hear Me Moan, written by Gar Francis and also M. Scavone. That's the same guy
talking about before.
Did this start out as one of your songs or one of his songs?
No, this is another one that Gar had the music to. He didn't have any lyrics. He had one line, which is the very first line of the song, and he said, here, see what you can do with this. So I took that first line and just built on it.
He had the music and the moans.
That was it.
But he needed some more lyrics. You know,
he needed something to talk about where the moans came from.
So, okay, here is Hear Me Moan.
I'm like a dog in the yard. I lick my wounds, you kick so hard. I feel pain, it makes me shake. Like all my bones about to break. I try to bark, I want to fight. Can't even growl, ain't got no bite. Instead of crawl, begin to beg. I drag my tail.
That was Hear Me Moan by the Doughboys, and I'm Ronnie Allen talking with the remaining Doughboys who are in the studio. Rich has left the phone, so I'm talking with the two Mikes, Mike with an I, Caruso, Mike with a Y, Scavone. And we're winding down this interview, which we're doing exclusively for Clay Call. And Clay, I hope you're getting a kick out of this. It is being done with such love and admiration for what you have meant to these guys.
Definitely.
As well as recording acts throughout the country and throughout the world, too, because the Rolling Stones owe you a debt of gratitude as well. We're going to play a couple more tracks from the CD. Has great liner notes, great pictures, and mentions Zachary, the cool ghoul.
And John Hawkins from the Nashville Teens also wrote liner notes on there.
There are elements of the Nashville Teens, in my opinion, on some of these recordings, like Tobacco Road.
Mm-hmm.
At least one or two of these songs reminded me of the feel of the Nashville Teens.
That's the whole era where we were influenced the most, that whole first British wave.
The first wave. And Nashville Teens were not from Nashville, by the way. They were from England. I'm not sure what part of England, but they were from England. Why don't we play one of the tracks that was not an original song? I'm Crying happens to be one of my favorite tracks from this CD. This is a song that was co-written by Alan Price and Eric Burden of the Animals. And it actually has kind of the bluesy sound that became the hallmark of the Animals. What did you try, Mike Scavone, to do with this song to make it a little bit different from the Animals version?
For me, it was one of the songs that I always really loved. I mean, Eric Burden really was one of my favorite singers. As much as I like the Stones, I think Eric Burden was a much better singer than Jagger, in my own opinion.
He's not listening, is he?
No, in reality, I mean...
Sorry, Mick!
As far as performance goes, Mick Jagger was definitely a better performer, but as far as voice goes, I mean, I loved Eric Burden.
Vocal talent, you're talking about.
Eric Burden's voice was just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And so what I tried to do with this, if you listen to his alongside of ours, listen to the Animals version, I'm a little bit harder in how I sing the song. I'm just a little bit rougher. But for the most part, you know, I mean, very much influenced by Eric Burden.
Mike Caruso, any comment on this before we play it?
Oh, no, same thing. You know, these are driving forces behind our music. I did the same thing. I would lock into Richard Strumming and just try to give it that nice driving bass behind his drums.
Well, we're going to go from moaning to crying right now.
Don't cry.
Track 8 on the CD called Is It Now? The Doughboys and I'm Crying.
I'm crying. was not crying.
But though boys, they're not really crying. They're smiling. They're very happy. And in fact, I am going to take my little Instamatic. Okay, don't be technical. Fujifilm. Here's my little Fujifilm. I want you guys to smile. Here we go. Hold on a second, because this is going to be for the website. Okay, to prove that they're not crying, this is for the website. Ladies and gentlemen, for the Clay Cole website. Cheese. Say cheese.
Cheese. Say Clay.
Yeah, they just said Clay. They said Clay. They didn't say cheese, but I got the picture. Okay, great. I really don't want this to end. It's been so much fun for me, and Clay, this has been for you. And before I give you my closing question, is there anything that Mike Caruso you would like to say, especially to Clay Cole?
Clay, we want to thank you for the opportunity to be on your show. We'd love to see you. Come on down, or we'll come down and see you. Are you in North Carolina?
I think
yeah,
he
really
is.
Oh, good. Okay, we're stopping by.
If there's a knock on the door, it's probably...
That's right, it's the Doughboys.
Watch out.
And Mike, have you got anything to add?
I really appreciate the fact that he had us on the show and that he's allowed us to do this interview, and he showed so much support and interest in the group. He had such a big part in the whole New York City scene and what took place here during the 60s. He's an amazing guy.
He truly is, and I'm so pleased to have made contact with him again, and I am so honored that he has allowed me to do this exclusively for his website. Such a pleasure.
Yeah, we thank you so much.
Thank you, Clay.
We're going to close with a song called She Comes in Colors. Before we close with that, I think I should ask, what are you doing in the near future besides leaving the studio as soon as we finish this interview? I mean, you have been doing performances. And
oh, yes.
Very, very actively, I should add.
Yeah, we're going to be at the Sellersville Theater, beautiful theater right outside of Philly.
May 6th.
Oh, May 6th.
Yeah, that'll be over by the time this is posted. However, we're just going to mention that you will have done it by then.
Right. And B.B. King's in New York City.
Yes.
Those two dates with the Electric Prunes. We're going to be back at the Stone Pony May 24th.
May 24th, and then we have the Music Fest here in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Yep. That's August 9th, I believe.
Yes.
It is,
so you already have gigs going through the late part of the summer.
Yes.
Yeah, we're working on a bunch more.
That's tremendous. You guys are going to stay together for a while this time.
Yeah, right? We hope so.
We're doing our best.
That's right.
Okay. Not in 10 years, we're going to have to arrange another surprise party.
Yeah, yeah.
Have it happen again. All right, last song we're going to play right now. This one written by the absent member tonight, but he's certainly highly thought of. You got something nice to say about Gar?
Gar Francis, when he came into the band, first off, he just fit into this band like he had always been in the band.
Really, he's perfect.
And he has been such a great addition to the band. He brought a lot of good songs to the band. He brings a lot of talent to the band, and he's a great personality on stage. He's a pleasure to work with.
We interrupt this interview show to bring you Gar Francis. 1 week later. We couldn't reach Gar on the phone when we did this interview 1 week ago, but a Doughboys interview show would not be complete without having the fourth current member of the Doughboys participating. Better late than never, I'm pleased to present Gar Francis.
Gar, thank you for joining me a week late.
Thank you, Ron. It's my pleasure.
Well, I got to tell you, the guy said some really nice things about you, but you ain't going to hear them until you actually hear the final edit of the show.
They were one of my first idols, actually. They were all seniors in high school, and I was a freshman. I used to go to the school dances and watch these guys, and I go, now that's what I want to do. And it just turned out, you know, after all these years later, I ended up in the band. Mike Scavone went to North Plainfield High School, and that's exactly where I went. And like I said, I was a freshman. He was a senior, and I used to just watch these guys in awe. They were incredible back then. There was something to see. They used to play our high school. They used to play in our gymnasium all the time. You know, I saw them many times. I saw them in Plainfield, and they played in the park a few times.
Well, fate sometimes plays strange tricks, and who would know that many, many years later, maybe 35 years later or so, you came into the group, what year?
Well, I think I've been in for like 3 or 4 years now, but just a little twist on that also is their original guitar player in early 90s formed a modern country band called Willie and the Wranglers, and I played guitar with him in that band.
Was this the Willie that was one of the original Doughboys?
Yeah, Willie Kirchhoffer was one of the original Doughboys. He actually put the band together.
Right, and he's the one that sadly passed away.
Yes, he did, and that's when they called me in to fill in a few dates to see what was going to happen.
It's very unusual for a group to achieve a certain amount of success in the 60s, get on TV and everything, and then just totally break up. And then years later, really by accident, that the group decided to reform. The two Mikes told us that story. On the current CD, you wrote or co-wrote several of the songs. You co-wrote Black Sheep with Mike Scavone, which is the first track on the CD called Is It Now?
Yeah, I basically had that song pretty much finished, and then when I handed it over to Mike, he added a bunch of ad-libs and things, and he added some great lyrical lines. You know what, Mike? You got to get credit for this. He added such wonderful lines to it. Hear Me Moan, we wrote together.
You also wrote a couple of other songs, which we're not going to play on the show. Maybe I've Gone Crazy.
Yep. My thing, Ron, is I've always been a songwriter, and the Doughboys were more a cover band. And then when I got into the band, I was always pushing originals on them, because ever since I was a little kid, I wanted to write songs. So I kind of pushed them into that direction, and again, it just all gelled really well.
You also wrote a song called Everything That's Close to You,
yes,
which closes the CD. And the song that we're going to close the show with right now is She Comes in Colors. I do remember that the Rolling Stones had a song called She's a Rainbow, and I believe it had that line, She Comes in Colors. Was there anything in that song that might have inspired you to write a song called She Comes in Colors?
Actually, there wasn't. If I remember correctly, I came up with the title and the hook after. When I started writing specifically for the Doughboys, I was trying to capture some of that 60s feel and a lot of the imagery in the lyrics. It's kind of 60-ish. It's got some just weird imagery in that song. And I think that She Comes in Colors just came naturally after writing the verses about all these fluorescent tubes and whatever else I was writing about in that song. You're just trying to capture the 60s feel with a modern tint to it.
Before I let you run, the guy said a lot of nice things about you. Do you have anything to say about Mike and Richard?
I just got to say, the band was incredible in the 60s. They're still incredible players today. We're pretty much like a three-piece band with a frontman, and I just get so many compliments on how much sound this band produces as a unit, and they're just incredible. They just play incredible together. It was, you know, an honor for me to get into the band. We're just going on a feel on this band. It's just what we do natural. There's no band like this band, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that was Gar. And now it's time to go back one week and close the show.
And I'm going to say to the Doughboys, good night, Doughboys.
Good night, Ronnie. Thank you very much, Ronnie.
Resonated like
Well, that's the show. And now I have a bonus track by the Doughboys. It's another song written by Gar Francis. And it includes Mike Caruso's daughter, Kelly Caruso, doing backing vocals. It's called Maybe I've Gone Crazy.